Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of Sports Time Radio, or as we like to call it around here, Dan's last day of the week. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to Sports Time Radio. Head on over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. Where are we going? I'm lost. No, sportstimeradio.com is where the blog goes up. Then you hit the link to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. You should like that while you're over there, of course. Don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I'm at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with trees.
So, you know, I've been doing the open for so long, Dan, I just got lost and distracted and confused. But anyways, let's jump right in here. Dan, we get another big-time major league free agent signing, and it's the White Sox who pull this one off. 4 years, $73 million for Yasmani Grandal. You, how you feel about this?
They needed a full-time catcher?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if they did. You know, they have that top prospect, Zach Collins, who I thought looked decent in, you know, his part-time. I know everybody's been complaining the White Sox need a hitter. And, you know, they said that it was going to be Nicholas Castellanos, but I guess they got their hitter. I just don't know if I'm sold on a career 241 hitting catcher.
I mean, I think 2 years. But I think the 4 years was a little too much.
Yeah, well, sadly, I think if they wanted to really sign him, they had to go 4 years, because if they did, somebody else would have. I guess you give Grandal some credit. He bet on himself. You know, last year he came down 4 years from $60 million to take a 1 year deal from the Brewers. You know, he hit .246 with 28 bombs, driving 7 runs. You know, obviously he's the best free agent catcher on the market. I guess we'll kind of see how this fits in. I guess my concern is, you know, you're talking about a guy who's going to be 36 by the end of this contract. How many games is he really going to be able to catch?
Well, I mean, let's knock off 30 games just to begin with the season. And that's not a knock on him. That's just the way the game is played now. So you're looking at roughly 130 games for the next 2 years, so the 260. I mean, but after that, I don't imagine him getting 200 more games in the final 2 years of the contract.
Yeah, because he caught in 137 games last year. It ended up being a total of 1,055 and 2 innings. I get it that, you know, now they'll have the DH to play with to keep his bat in the lineup if they want to. And, you know, I know he's played a little first base, with Abreu. Depending on how that goes, he's not going to spend too much time over there. So there are some ways, but yeah, I'm wondering, I mean, a 35, 36 year old catcher, are you going to get 100 games out of him behind the plate?
I don't think so.
So, you know, yeah, like I'm not, you know, I'm not too worried about the first couple years of the contract. I think it'll be just fine. But, yeah, you know, these next, you know, these final two, you know, that's a lot to ask out of a guy. And, you know, like I was saying, they had, you know, Zach Collins is only 24. And he's, you know, he's looked like, you know, a top prospect. I know he didn't hit great last, you know, in his, what do you have? He played 27 games, hit a .186. But we're talking a really small sample size. So, you know, not to get up in arms about that. That's what Sean Burke Stu likes to do. So we can't do that here. We'll save that for tomorrow. I don't know. I mean, I guess this means Collins goes to AAA to start the year. They just bring in a lower tier veteran backup, or do you think Collins actually makes the team and try to do something? You know, maybe he catches once a week or twice a week while Grandal DHs.
Well, I was going to ask, isn't McCann still on the team, or is he gone?
Is he still there? I'm trying to remember. I thought he only had a one-year deal. So.
The article I read said that, you know, he's now one of four catchers in their system. And
he's actually arbitration eligible. So that'll make it even more interesting because, I mean, McCann is coming off a career year. Where he actually made the All-Star team. I don't know how that's going to work.
Well, I mean, is it one of those where you try to get him that money and then try to trade him? You could have Colin playing underneath Grandal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible. I mean, you know, you never know with baseball how it works. So, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, you know how I felt. I'm not all that thrilled with this signing because I believe they needed to go after a number one starter, and that was where they should have been laying their money down. I mean, I get it that, you know, Giolito was really good, and, you know, Ronaldo Lopez has shown signs of being that guy. But, you know, now it looks like Michael Kopech bouncing back and Carlos Rodon being anything instead of going out and kind of locking down a guy. So it's wonderful. You got a great bat, but I don't know if you have the pitching to back it up now.
Well, who plays right field?
You did what?
I said, who plays right field? I didn't do anything.
Yeah, you know, that's been the other question they've been asking. But, you know, they have so much young talent. You know, don't forget they got Luis Robert is like one of the top, if not the top, minor league prospects. You know, you're going to need a spot for him eventually. You know, I do believe he's more of a center fielder. So, I don't know, does Adam Engel move over? Is it Lurie Garcia who had a really good year for them? You know, they still got Charlie Wilson floating around. You know, Nicky Delmonico. They've got a bunch of young guys that, you know, if they could just pick one and see how they do. I don't think I mentioned Ryan Cordell. He may be the oldest of the bunch, but so there's a ton of guys to plug in out there. I just don't know what they're, you know, how they're going to go about it or who's going to play. You know, maybe do they move Tim Anderson to the outfield like they were supposed to for your guy Jose Rodon or Rondon, who ended up getting released?
Oh, he did go.
Yeah, I think he got released not only by the White Sox, but I think the Orioles picked him up and then ended up releasing him. So you may want to tag Bruce Levine in that tweet you sent out and ask what happened.
mean, he was supposed to be the starting shortstop for the 2019 or 2020 World Series White Sox.
Right. You know, and I know it doesn't mean anything in today's game, but Tim Anderson would win the American League batting title. So, yeah, you know, shows kind of where the guys are going. You know, I know to make room, the White Sox did designate Daniel Polka for assignment. So, I don't know if anybody will jump on him and, you know, pick him up and stuff like that. But we'll see. But that does kind of get me to where I honestly thought we were going to end up starting out the podcast until this signing happened. You tagged me in the Facebook post. The Yankees made a couple of, you know, I'm going to go ahead and call them surprising moves. I don't know how else to really kind of look at them. The big one, of course, is they've decided to cut ties with Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, I don't believe he played a game last year. I want to double check. Actually, he hasn't played a game for them in 2 years. But he has. This was the final year of his contract coming up. So they're paying him $21.14 million to not play for them.
Good for him.
Yeah. He also made that same amount the last 2 years when he did play a game. So, I mean, you're looking at a guy who's now collected, you know, almost $63.5 million the last 3 years and hasn't played. So that's, I guess that's good work if you can get it. I'm sure he wants to play, but the injuries have just limited him. And, I mean, this has got to go down as one of the worst signings in free agent history, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Oh. But, yeah, I was – were you surprised they finally decided to cut bait? You know, they are probably going to be without Aaron Hicks all next season because he's having Tommy John. So, you know, a healthy Ellsbury could have been a fifth outfielder or something. You know, I know obviously that's a lot of money to pay a fifth outfielder, but you're paying him anyways. Are you surprised they cut bait on him?
Slightly, but in the end, no, not really.
Ah, you broke up a little. What was that?
Not really. I mean, with the talent that they have, they'll be able to fill his spot. And, you know, with the youth in the outfield, you know, it'll suck having to eat that, but they ate more with A-Rod.
Do you think this opens up an avenue for your guy, Clint Frazier, to finally get some regular playing time?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
So when you draft him next year, that's what you're hoping for?
Yeah, as long as you don't bid me up like a jerk.
Well, I'm going to. You know, that's exactly what I'm going to do is bid you up and, you know, make sure you have to pay for him. So, you know. But it's Clint Frazier. There's only so much bid him up before look at you and think you're pretty. So, and then the other move. So, you know, the other move they went is they've also designated Greg Bird for assignment. Now, if you remember, Bird came in 2015 and made quite a splash. Hit 11 homers in 46 games. Looked like he was going to be the future Yankee first baseman for a very long time. And then couldn't stay healthy. He missed the entire 2016 season. Played just 48 games in 2017. He did play 82 in 2018. Last year managed just 10 games due to injury. I guess I'm not as surprised by this move, but it is kind of interesting because, again, you know, you were looking at a guy, I mean, he came rolling in, and they were like, oh, yeah, here's the next great Yankee first baseman. Look at this guy. And I don't know if I've seen him play since, Dan, honestly.
No, he's one of the guys I think we talk about when we're like, oh, look who's on the injured reserve for the IL.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? He'll be 28 here real soon. You know, my guess is if he's healthy, somebody brings him into camp on one of those, you know, you get the invitation to the minor league contract with the invitation to spring training is, you know, what I guess they'll get out of him. But, yeah, I can't see him getting any more than that. Can you?
No, I don't know why, but Cleveland can sign.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it won't. Yeah, you know, I won't be, like I said, I won't be surprised if somebody brings him in just to, hey, you know, let's take a look at this guy, see what's going on. You know, if he's healthy, you know, he might be a decent part-time guy, but I can't, you know, I can't see him being, you know, much of anything else. So, and then in what I call Dan-related news, the Miami Marlins have designated Wei-Yin Chin for assignment. He's in the final year of his contract, Dan, $22 million on the books for Chin this year. He didn't make any starts last year. He was a reliever. He appeared in 45 games. He went 0-1 with a 6.59 ERA. You know, I mean, he, at one point in time, he was kind of a average, middle-of-the-road starter, I guess, maybe a 3 or 4. He did win 16 games one year with the Orioles when the Orioles actually used to win games. You know, I don't know, Dan, this has kind of been your guy until he sputtered out the last few years. Is there a job out there for him? I mean, he's you know, he's 34, but he is left-handed. Those guys always seem to kind of find ways, you know, into the rotation or the bullpen or something. So you buy in Chin for that?
I think he might be in the same situation, but, you know, what are the implications if someone picks him up?
Well, you know, the Marlins are on the hook for that money. You know, I believe a team only has to pay him the minimum. You know, and then, you know, of course, with a player like this, I guess there's always a chance he goes back to Japan, right?
Yeah. No, I think so. If anything, he'll be on a team this year. Maybe a couple. I don't think he goes away yet. But, I mean, you're right. He just, after Jose Fernandez passed away, he just completely fizzled out.
Yeah, well, you know, he had that really bad injury back in, I think it was 2017. And it was almost like he just never came back from it. You know, obviously some of it plays into the fact that he's on a bad team and he's not going to get the run support as a starter. But, yeah, I guess it's kind of a weird signing as it was for them. So we'll, you know, we'll have to see how that works, you know, how that works out or where he lands. But yeah, it was definitely I had almost kind of forgotten about him. Did you remember he was still hanging on with the Marlins?
No, I totally forgot.
So, you know, but yeah, it'll be, you know, one of those things where it's kind of like, hey, wait, did we, no, where's this guy at or what's this guy doing? Maybe the Cubs will bring him in as their left-handed specialist. You know, that'll be quite interesting. So, but yeah, those, you know, as you know, and this is, you know, teams are, adjusting their 40-man roster, so they're trying to get the guys on there that they don't want to expose to the Rule 5 draft. So that's why they are, you know, kind of trying to work these things out and make sure, you know, how these things go. So we'll see how, you know, I think they're done now, so we should be okay. You know, that could be a plus. But, you know, you don't want to expose your top prospects to that draft and, you know, fear losing them, even though, you know, I know when you're a Rule 5 guy, you have to stay on the major league roster all season, which could be tough. So, but yeah, even so, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to lose your top guy. I don't think the Cubs have anything to worry about because, let's face it, they don't have any top prospects. But, you know, there are other teams with quite a few, you know, quite a few guys you have to protect. So now, are you, you know, I guess the other question, Dan, are you surprised that we've seen a couple of, you know, I guess what you would call early signings? You know, the Braves jumped on the Will Smith thing right away. You know, I know they also signed Chris Martin the other day, but that's not exactly a huge signing. But, you know, this is a big signing here, Grandal. You know, he was rated as one of the, you know, the top free agents on the market. And for him to go off, I mean, before the general manager's meetings, is how big is this?
Well, I think the meetings already happened because Kenny Williams said they kind of met with him face-to-face during general manager's meeting.
Well, maybe it was the owner's meeting I meant then. It was some meeting I haven't had yet.
Well, the winter meeting. We haven't had the winter meetings yet.
Right. See, I knew it was a meeting of some kind.
Yeah. Which is generally when, you know, everything starts to happen. So I'm kind of surprised, but I think it's very smart on his end, you know, not waiting it out. You know, I don't think he jumped at the first thing, but, you know, this was all part of Kenny Williams' plan, according to him.
So, yeah, I obviously it's a big one for the White Sox. I'll be interested to see how that plays out for them. You know, I know they've been talking about trying to get Jose Abreu inked to a deal now that he's, you know, he's accepted the qualifying offer. So, you know, we'll see how that shakes out as well. But, you know, I guess it never hurts to have a little more offense in today's game. I just, like I said, I would have much rather seen them bring in a, you know, Madison Bumgarner or maybe even a Dallas Keuchel. But
yeah, well, on the other side of it, but maybe that's what they needed was maybe a more veteran catcher behind the plate who's, you know, experienced in postseason and with, you know, top star pitching.
So he can pitch, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
well, you know, he could be a part of the recruiting process.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's, you know, I don't think it's, I don't know. It's one of those where, like you said, you know, someone would have paid for it anyways. I'm not going to totally crap on it. I don't think it's the greatest signing. You know, I still think maybe 2 years would have been more appropriate with a third-year option for the White Sox, not the player. But, you know, like you said, it's kind of pulling out for himself, so. I don't know. We won't find out for the next 2 years if it's a bad deal.
Yeah, how it goes. We'll have to remember to revisit that. So, no.
Yeah. I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will.
I wandered around a couple more. I don't know. Let's call them interesting rumors here because I don't know how else to describe it. But, you know, the first one here pops up. You know, everybody is still convinced that the Red Sox are probably going to end up dealing Mookie Betts. just because of their financial situation they put themselves in. Well, the one I heard today, Dan, I think it's the first time that there's been like a deal. Going to the Dodgers for what would actually be two of the Dodgers' top prospects, Dustin May and I believe it's Keibert Ruiz. And then John Peterson would also head into the deal because he would replace Beck in the outfield for the Red Sox. You know, I'm kind of looking at this, Dan, and the first thing that popped in my mind was, God, they're asking the Dodgers to give up a lot for a guy who's no guarantee will be back there.
Yeah, well, you know, and where's the validity in that rumor?
So, you know, because, you know, Ruiz is, you know, it's time for him to start catching at the major league level, but the Dodgers have Will Smith, who just started catching at the major league level last year. So I can understand, okay, you want to move him. You know, Dustin May looked decent in his outings last year as a pitcher. I mean, I would honestly think that those two guys and maybe a lower tier prospect would be enough to bring Betts back. And again, I mean, we're talking about a guy that there's no guarantee he signs with the Dodgers. So they would be giving up two of probably their top five prospects plus another one for 1 year of Mookie Betts, 1 year guaranteed of Mookie Betts. That's a lot to ask a team to do, isn't it?
You know, and it's not like they're swapping bad contracts like they did back in 2012 or 13.
Yeah, and, you know, and I mean, even though, you know, it's the Dodgers who have, you know, it just seems like a wealth of prospects. They seem to, you know, every time you turn around, it's like, oh, hey, look, there's another Dodger prospect. You know, look at this guy. You know, so, you know, obviously they have a fantastic farm system. But I think you would still want close to equal value if you're going to make a deal like that. And I don't know if... like I said, it just seems like a lot to give up to me.
I think a lot, not even the word.
Oh. But yeah, and then here's the other one that I knew we would get a kick out of. This is Chris Bryant, Dan. But instead of the Phillies, like I think you and I believe if he's actually traded to – or if he's actually traded, that's where he would end up going. This one has him going to the Braves. Now, in return, the Cubs would get Max Fried, Drew Waters, Bryce Wilson, and William Contreras. I don't know if he's related to Wilson, but William Contreras. You know, Fried would fit nicely in the Cubs' rotation. You know, he could be that fifth guy. Waters is listed here as the Braves switch hitting number two Braves prospect, and they call him a budding star in the outfield. Wilson is the Braves number six prospect, but oddly only profiles as a middle of the rotation starter or possibly late inning reliever. Oh, here you go, Contreras, who is actually the younger brother of Wilson. Is the Braves' number eight prospect, and as they put in here, could give the Cubs a succession plan if the elder Contreras is traded or leaves after he becomes a free agent. So it would basically be for a starter and three prospects. Are you in on that kind of deal?
No.
No, why not?
I don't think it's no, I'm just not. I mean, are you continually trying to push the team back into rebuilding mode like you did in 2011, 12, or 13, or whatever? Is that the goal here?
Yeah, well, I think, unfortunately, the only way, you know, this team is going to sustain any long-term you know, presence or contention like, you know, we would hope it would do, is to move one of these guys, you know, a Brian, a Contreras, a Baez, a guy like that to bring a little something back where you can kind of help the farm system reset. Because, I mean, we've been over it a million times, Dan. I mean, this farm system is barren. You know, there's no help coming out of there. So, you know, yeah, this would actually give them, you know, a little something. I mean, you know, you're getting, you know, Fried is a solid starter, so that would help out nicely. You know, he could fit in, and then it would probably also allow them to let Jose Quintana move on when he's a free agent next year.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize he was a free agent next year.
Yeah, he's they just picked up his option, so he's in the last year of his deal. But, yeah, you know, and at least, like, see, I like this return a lot better for the Cubs than I do for what the, you know, than the, you know, the Dodgers deal. You know, because the Braves are getting a player with a little bit of control, you know, while the Dodgers were getting, hey, we're going to bring this guy in for a year and go for it, and if it doesn't work out, we'll just let him go. So, you know, and then in return, Dan, not all these moves are genius, but here's the next one they have. They have the Reds trading Luis Castillo to the Yankees because eventually, you know, somebody had to go to the Yankees for Devi Garcia, your guy Clint Frazier, and J.A. Hop. You know, Garcia is the Yankees' number one prospect. And this is what I find kind of stupid is basically they explain that you would be bringing Garcia in to replace Castillo, who is, you know, really on the verge of becoming a breakout, top of the rotation kind of starter. Obviously, it would be fantastic to get Clint Frazier and plug him into the outfield, let him play every day. You know, if they're getting J.A. Hop, you know, the damn Yankees are paying the majority of that salary. I guess what I just don't understand is what's the benefit of the Reds making this trade? You know, I don't think this makes them any better, do you?
No, not really.
So,
I guess it's time Yasiel Puig if they want an outfielder.
Right. You know, I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense looking at how they, you know, and I get it. Like I said, the Yankees, we work this in. And then the next one, this is another one. I don't know about this one, Dan. This has the Pirates trading Starling Marte to the Blue Rays. Oddly, all they're getting in return is Hunter Renfroe and Pedro Oliva. Oliva is actually the Padres' number 24 prospect. He's a 22-year-old right-hander who projects to be a number 3 or 4 starter. You know, Renfroe is a big-time power-hitting outfielder who, like everybody else in today's game, strikes out a lot. I almost, you know, and I get it that Marte is in the last year of his deal, and I believe he does have a club option for next year at only $12.5 million. So if you want him, you could have him for 2 years. This almost seems like the Padres would be ripping the Pirates off, doesn't it?
Oh, big time.
So, yeah, I don't – you know, and like the article he was trying to push that Renfroe has hit 85 home runs in 379 games. But he doesn't really have an all-around game like Marte does. And I honestly think if the Pirates wait and, you know, if there's an early season injury or, you know, if it gets to the trading deadline, I really think a veteran would step up and pay for Marte, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and you know what I mean, in all honesty, you know, if the Cubs had the prospect to make the deal, how good would he look playing center field every day for the Cubs?
Next to Hayward and whoever plays left, that would be awesome.
Right, you know, yeah, be it if it's Schwarber or whatever, but, yeah, you know, I mean, Marte's a plus defender, so you would have two really good defenders, and then be it Schwarber or whoever ends up, you know, like I said, ends up being the left fielder. You know, sadly, I just don't think the Cubs have the necessary pieces to do this. I mean, obviously, you have to give up Almora, which I don't think they have a problem with, but there, you know, there's nothing else in that minor league system that you could bring it back unless you're willing to give up Horner, and I don't think they are because I think they believe he's their starting second baseman this season.
I just don't see the interdivision trade like that happening.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I know it does happen occasionally, but, God, if I was the Cardinals and the Brewers and the Cubs got Marte, I would be really upset that I didn't go get him.
Yeah.
Especially at that price tag. It's 11-5 this year and 12-5 next year. That's a steal for a guy with his skill set. So, and then the last one they wrap up here, Dan, apparently we're still trying to fix the Nationals' bullpen. They think the Nationals need to go out and get Ken Giles from the Blue Jays, and in return, all they can offer to give them is their number six prospect, who's a left-handed starter by the name of Tim Cates. So, that's all it takes to get a couple. There's a middle of, you know, a middle-of-the-road prospect. You know, we'll see how that goes. Now, you know, I'm trying to think. I don't believe there's a big time closer out there on the free agent market. Do you see maybe some of these guys getting moved? They mentioned Giles, but you know, could Cleveland move on from maybe like a Brad Hand or? You know, the Padres are always kind of weird in their dealings. You know, could they actually move a Kirby Yates? You know, somebody like that. See it more from the market for there's no guy out there.
Sorry, it's windy out, so you're breaking up. I was losing everything.
Well, that's okay.
Well, I mean, what are your thoughts? Who do you think's moving? Why not? Why?
It's kind of questionable because, you know, they're talking about guys. You know, like whether the Indians like it or not, they're going to contend in the AL Central next year. You know, the only way they're not going to contend is if they move like Lindor and Kluber. You know, but I honestly think they could survive moving one of them. So it's kind of like, why would they deal Brad Hand unless somebody blew their head off with a deal? So, you know, and, you know, like the same thing with the Padres. You're supposed to be improving. Why do you want to give up a closer who just had a fantastic year for you? You know, and like I know, you know, like we mentioned, you know, he was great 2 years ago. Last year his ERA was almost 5. So you're not bringing in a closer. You're bringing in a guy that you have to hope bounces back. You know, and then the same thing with, you know, Michael Givens. You know, he's with the Orioles. He had a an ERA over 4.5. So are you getting a closer, or are you getting closer in those situations, or what are you getting? Like I said, I get it. The market is thin, but you know, if you're going to go get Michael Givens, just sign Pedro Strop. It's the same pitcher. So, yeah, I don't know, how much sense, some of it makes. I mean, obviously, if the Blue Jays can give up Giles, they're not going to compete. And he's a legitimate closer, but out of the guys they had listed, he's really the only guy it would make sense to deal.
Well, and what are you giving up? If you're not giving up anything, and you're the Padres, do you take the risk on Blake or someone like that?
I think if you're gonna, if you're gonna bring in a guy like Blake Treinen or a guy like Michael Givens, you have to have somebody else there. He's got to go to a team where, if he implodes, or in Treinen's case, continues to pitch like he did last year, you need somebody else to turn to. If you don't have that guy, what do you do? So, I mean, in all honesty, I think you bring him in as a setup guy who may close every now and then and see how it goes. But, yeah, I mean, you don't want to keep running the closer out there that's got a 5 ERA, do you?
Well, you could call the Cubs and get one of the closers that they've signed that doesn't play.
Yeah, so, well, you can just go sign him yourself now. Brandon Morrow's a free agent. That actually was a report I saw the Cubs had interest back. So.
Yeah. Yeah, if it weren't the digital age and I read that, I would have crumpled that paper up and just threw it in the garbage. But, I'm not doing that to my cell phone or my iPad.
Yeah, the only way I would bring a guy like Brandon Morrow in if I was any team was if it was on a minimum deal and everything else was incentive laden. here you go. I'll give you the minimum salary. That's all I'm going to give you. And then, after that, everything else you have to earn. I'm not forking anything else up for you, but that's just me. So
now, you brought that up, and obviously we haven't seen the terms to Grandal's deal, but the White Sox threw that at Machado. So I'm wondering, do you think they threw any of that in there, where he's got some good incentives?
Yeah, I haven't seen any yet, but, with the White Sox, it's possible. They like to do that in their contracts. So
yeah. I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, but that is definitely not a knock on their system of doing things, because I think that is probably one of the smartest ways to go about it, is to incentive-based. Because they typically,
yeah,
a lot of them all have incentives, Ooh, you get $50,000 if you make the All-Star game. You get, a box of baseballs if you get the Gold Glove. And I'm exaggerating, obviously, but, a trip to Disney World if you play in the playoffs. So, they all have these little incentives that are kind of minute, but I don't know. Personally, the way the game is played today, I still think that there should be some bigger incentives for the amount of money that these teams are having to shell out. And I know in the end, the owners in the league always are the bad guys, because, they're the the fat cat sitting at the top with all the money and the cigars looking like Mr. Monopoly. But, you know, it's not just about them. It's about the fan base, too. And, you know, fortunately with the Yankees, they have so much money that it hasn't affected them a whole lot. But if you're a team like the White Sox, you know, I did not at all disagree with the way they structured the contract to reach out to Manny, because if you're going to be stuck with him for 7 years, you and I think both agreed that in the last 3-4 years, we don't think he would be the guy that was being signed today or last year. And you'd have to eat a lot. And, you know, how's the best way to eat and get stuck with a contract? Well, incentivize it. You got to wonder if some of that's going to play into what Jose Abreu. And, again, not a White Sox fan, but I think it would be something kind of cool, special, whatever you want to call it, if they can maintain Jose Abreu on that team and kind of keep running with what they've got and kind of build with what they have around them. Even though the majority of White Sox fans, I don't know if it's a Chicago thing, just a sports thing in general, but, you know, someone's got to take the blame for everything. And right now it's Tim Anderson, even though he's like finally getting it together and putting together a pretty solid career for himself. And here's where I get beat up by White Sox fans. You know, that's what.
Yeah. I have no problem with the guy having to earn his money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I always kind of thought that was how the world worked. You know, you went out and, you know, you went out and you worked and they paid you. So, you know, I mean, luckily for Manny, the Padres were just willing to give him money regardless of what he did. And, you know, let's face it, he did not have a very good year last year. So they definitely didn't get their money's worth out of him for year one. You know, you can say the same thing for Bryce Harper with the Phillies. We'll see if year two goes any better.
Well, and not only that, you know, the biggest thing we talked about with Manny was, oh, he's going to get all this money, but he proved what kind of player he was in that postseason with the Dodgers. And they got what they paid for.
Yeah, he definitely did not show his best side. So, it's one of those things. I have no issue whatsoever with, with a team, being, hey, we'll give you this much and, here's what you got to do, for the rest of it. But, I get it, the union doesn't like that. And obviously the agents don't like it. So, we'll see, but maybe down the road, this is the way it goes. It seems kind of like smart business. So, right? I don't know what else, what else it has to, has to do there. So we'll see how these things go. But obviously, it's that fun time of year where you get to speculate on everything and, say, hey, who's going where or who's doing this or, how that's all going. But, just one of those, one of those fun things. What was that? I saw something that I wanted to mention baseball-wise, and I forgot what it was. I'm having one of those days where I just kind of blind on everything. But I did see, I guess technically it's considered sports-related because he did used to be an NFL player, but the inventor of the Nerf football, who was a gentleman by the name of Fred Cox, passed away. He was 80 years old. Now, Fred Cox used to be the kicker for the Minnesota Vikings. and actually had a had quite a long career for the Vikings, 15 seasons, from 1963 to 1967. His career scoring was 1,365 points. So, not a bad career. He was also on those four Viking teams that went to the Super Bowl. Of course, sadly, they did all lose. But, yeah, when he retired, he was second in NFL history in scoring, only behind George Blanda. And he had actually made the most field goals in NFL history at 282. Humorously, though, I have a feeling that most people probably remember him for inventing the Nerf football, just because that's kind of how America goes with these things. But yeah, just one of those things. So, I can't remember. I can't even tell how many Nerf footballs I went through. But yeah, the guy who invented it actually used to be a football player. So,
oh wow, I didn't know that, to be honest.
So, not only did he, have a 15-year NFL career as a field goal kicker, so he made decent money, but then he went on. I mean, imagine how many Nerf footballs have been sold.
They got the Nerf guns.
But while I soliloquied in football, Dan, here, I wanted to bring up this Myles Garrett thing that I guess I can say I'm not really shocked that this took this turn. Garrett and his representatives are now claiming that Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph used a racial slur, and that's what provoked Garrett to swing the helmet during their brawl. Now, there's absolutely no evidence of this. The NFL has already come out and said it. They've upheld Garrett's suspension, and that's what he was trying to get reduced. Basically, Dan, I look at this as a legal defense strategy. Do you see it as something else, or are you in line with me there?
You have to kind of fill me in because I'm pretty much out of the loop with the NFL, except for making sure all my guys
are playing. They had the big brawl where Garrett hit the guy in the head. He yanked the guy's helmet off, and then in the melee ended up hitting him in the head with it.
Ooh.
You know, the NFL suspended him for the rest of the season. More or less, it was actually indefinite because they said it could carry over into next year. He appealed. He had his appeal hearing yesterday, and this was one of his reasonings.
Oh.
Was he brought. Now, the funny thing is, this didn't come up after the game. You know, it wasn't mentioned in any postseason interviews. We haven't heard it anywhere else. You know, it wasn't leaked out of anybody's locker room. Nothing else came up here or there. But during his appeal hearing, the guy used a racial slur.
Well, and
so
don't they realize that the NFL, it's in the NFL that it's 20, let's just go 2020, keep it easy. They have microphones everywhere. The referees are mic'd up, and they record everything, especially around those end zones. I mean, they got those big dome-shaped things where there's a guy who gets paid to stand there and hold it to capture noise with the microphone.
Yeah.
So, they do realize that, right? like you said, nothing was leaked out of either locker room. I mean, it's not like the NFL can't not go back and be like, yeah, he called you whatever he called you. But at the end of the day, I mean, punching the guy, I think I could agree with that. But, I've been watching a lot of Investigation Discovery, and, this lady bullied her daughter and boyfriend into killing her landlord. And And her, as her defense was, well, he was mean to my kid. Oh, okay. So that warrants you killing him. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, let's face it. If this would have happened, there is absolutely no way that Myles Garrett doesn't say something about it during the post-game press conference. You know, because that would, you know, I would almost understand him acting that way if this had happened. But, you know, all it really looks like now, because of the way it's played out, is it looks like it's a bad defense technique to try to get him out of a suspension.
Yeah. Well, not only that, if that were the case, wouldn't, you know, the other guy's own teammates kind of not defend him? They heard him
calling
racial slurs.
Yeah, well, you know, and oddly enough, the one teammate who, if I ever was or ever would have been an NFL player who got who actually got his suspension reduced was is it Marquise Pouncey? Is he the Steeler? I'm trying to remember. I know they're brothers, and I can never remember which one was which. But he was right there to defend Rudolph, and you know, he threw some big shots. Yeah, it was Marquise Pouncey. You know, he threw some big shots and actually kicked Garrett while he was on the ground defending his quarterback. I mean, this is a guy I want on my team if he's going to defend me like that. He's an African-American player. If this would have happened, I kind of think that he would have come out and said something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not to mention, you know, the Steelers, like most, or I believe I should say all NFL teams, you know, have quite a few African-American players on their team.
Not to mention
so
the coach.
The Steelers are also, you know, hell, they may be one of the only team with an African-American head coach. So, you know, just imagine the uproar in their own locker room.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this as a, you know, because like he brought his attorney and agent and stuff to this arbitration hearing with him. So I really just see this as a last ditch effort to try to save a suspension.
Yeah, well, and you know, and this is where you're letting your emotions definitely take over, but with all the stuff with the NFL and the helmets and concussion protocol, I mean, I would think the last thing you want to do is try taking a guy out with your helmet.
Yeah. And, you know, this is actually the third incident Garrett has had this year. The first two obviously weren't this violent, but he's already been fined twice this year. So, you know, this is just kind of an escalation. So, yeah, I guess the way to say it is I hope it didn't happen, and I honestly don't believe it did, just kind of from the way it has played out. But, yeah, I just find it odd that we don't bring it up until the suspension hearing.
Yeah, that is odd.
So... but, yeah, they did end up upholding his suspension. He is actually technically suspended indefinitely, so he will be out the rest of the year, and they'll see about how it goes next year for him. There. All right.
And I'm only out until Monday.
Yeah, you know, the deal, the end doesn't come back home on Monday. That's what you're going to do. Don't forget we'll start the Tennessee show, which is at 2:00 on the show. You know, we're going to have to sit down. We don't even want to talk to that. And hey, if you stop by and listen to us live, thank you for the organization. We appreciate it. And remember, the podcast is available for you to listen to Inside 1 over at
TV.com. Sportstimeradio.com.